Session number 19058, Reel 2.
For the good Reel 2. The state at North Mimms, a large estate. So we could use that for training, route marching, very long route marches. Incidentally, I remember my first route march when we got to Pirbright. That's when we had the exalted rank of guardsman after being recruit. We would go by train to Brookwood Station. We would get out and we would be marched up from Brookwood Station to Pirbright Camp behind the fife and drum band. It was very enjoyable. We liked that. And we were then fully fledged guardsmen. And the first route march we ever had, we were told it was going to be a very short route march, just once around the cemetery. Well, this was around Brookwood Cemetery. If you know anything about Brookwood Cemetery...
I live there.
Of course. It was the largest cemetery attached to the metropolitan area. It was miles and miles and miles around it. And it was really, for a baptism, quite a route march. But I think we enjoyed training at Pirbright. We also did with Bren gun carriers. We had quite a variety of training. We really were trained for all the facets of wartime activity that we should have. It was good. Training was excellent, and the instructors were good. The army instructors, the armoury instructors, the weaponry. And, of course, they have ranges there, which are really a continuation of Bisley. So we had ranges comparable with Bisley. We had good facilities for training. Excellent. Came, eventually, when we were stationed at Harrow, with the MT there, we then were put on draft. And we were to go... Well, we weren't told where our destination was, but eventually we did sail from Liverpool, and we went around in convoy. There was Stirling Castle, was the rather graceful ship among the convoy. We were on the Esperance Bay, which was the sister ship to the Jervis Bay. The Jervis Bay was one of the hero ships of the war. It went down with all guns blazing. We were on the sister ship Jervis Bay. We got into the terrible storm of November 1942, the North Atlantic storm. That was an experience never to be forgotten.
42?
In 1942, by this time. Yes, time's flying, isn't it? We were on our way around. We knew we were going to Egypt. The storm, after a couple of days, the storm subsided. We then got towards the tropics. Fascinating to see flying fish, dolphins, sharks. Other than the anxiety of being torpedoed, we enjoyed the trip. We got to Durban, where we didn't have time to see the town. We got off the Esperance Bay, down the quay, and marched up the gangplank of the New Amsterdam, which was at that time the fifth largest ship in the world. Sadly, we didn't have the hospitality we expected at Durban. The people were waiting to take us around the town. But the lady in white was, and I'm sorry I've forgotten her name, she was an opera singer. She was from a Boer family, but she was very much one of our allies, and she came with a megaphone singing her lovely operettas unaccompanied, and the ship was it was something to remember, just the crowded all these soldiers hanging over the side of the ship to catch every word she was singing. Hundreds, seemed like thousands of them, all leaning over the rails and applauding her. She was fantastic. And it wasn't until after the war that the Daily Mirror Someone wrote into the old codger's letters to say, "We remember the lady who sang, the lady in white who sang," and the Daily Mirror started the campaign. Yes, who was the lady in white? And I'm very happy that King George VI took this up and presented her she was on the honours list later. Which made us all very happy because she was a great morale booster. We came up on this luxury ship to Port Tewfik when we rejoined the battalion, or joined the battalion. The battalion was coming down from the Syrian border, and we were reinforcements.
Which battalion was
this? The 3rd Battalion of the Coldstream Guards. And they were saying how cold it had been. They went to this semi-emergency on the Syrian border. Anyway, we were greeted by Griffith Jones, who was the adjutant. Later, he became leading QC of the country. He was a great either defence or prosecution. He made a fantastic name for himself at the Old Bailey later, but this was our adjutant then. He welcomed us, and then the padre came and gave us a wonderful talk on telling us all about what a Christian war we were fighting. Then the sergeant major took over. "Come on, you bloody something, something, and a lot." So we realised it was quite some Christian war we were greeting. We were having greetings from. It was a good battalion. Now, one of the fantastic statistics, especially for officers, was that of the original 1,000 approximately that left the Cairo area, Port Tewfik area, Geneva area, that left that area at Christmas 1942, of the original 1,000 I'm talking of, by the time we got to Trieste at the end of the war and did our statistics, of the original 1,000, just under 87% had been killed or wounded. That is, killed or hospitalised wounded. Too many. I'm not saying 87% were killed, but killed or wounded. That was our baptism of fire was after chasing after Rommel, because by this time Rommel was in full retreat.
But you said you'd been in Syria.
The battalion had been there. The battalion came
but
down.
You didn't go.
I didn't. No, we joined them we joined them at near Cairo. They had come back from there, and that's where we joined them. But it's from that point that this particular statistic had started. In other words, phase two, they'd already had grave losses after Tobruk and Knightsbridge, which I missed. I came after that. We were chasing up as fast as we could after the Jerry. Rommel was retreating. After what seemed about 3,000 miles of fairly flattish sand, we came across our first hills, and it was like a brick, like a wall in front of us. And that was the horseshoe-shaped hills of Marath. And on the 17th of March, 1943, we had done some patrols, but this was our first real battle. I was with Number 1 Company under Major Wills.
That's which company?
Number 1 Company of the 3rd Battalion Coldstream. And the company with others was lined up, and we night was falling. We'd repulsed a tank attack about 2 days before. The Germans had been foxed by our dummy minefields, and they came right over in front of right into our guns that repelled them. So morale was quite high. We thought, oh yes, we can beat them. But here, this was a different kettle of fish. Number 1 Company and also Grenadiers on our left suffered fantastic losses. The shell came over and wounded the driver of the ammunition truck. Whereupon the sergeant said, "Good, you can drive. Take over the truck and wait until the signal comes before you come up." Well, the signal never came. But that saved my life, because of the 100 approximately who went up with Major Wills, 9 came back that night at the Battle of Marath. It's now a battle honour, of course. And 9 came back that night. Some came back after, but it was a terrible mangling. The next night...
Which platoon were you in?
Oh, gosh. Now, Mr. Snowden's platoon, now what was he? I think it was, would have been called 3. Number 3 platoon, I think. There was the officer, the platoon sergeant, the corporal. But I didn't go with them anyway. I was told to stay back. So it was a non-event, except that it saved my life. I was waiting for the signal to drive the truck up, and the signal never came. And those poor devils were mangled. Major Wills, sorry, I'm coughing again, had he left behind him caviar and other things, and our officers were, of course, shattered that he was killed. They said, well, of course, he wouldn't have wanted his caviar wasted. We will celebrate with white wine and caviar when the last German is driven out of North Africa, out of Tunisia. So came the great day. The commanding officer said to me, will you go and tell the master cook that we'll have the caviar and put the white wine in the river to cool it. We'll have the caviar to celebrate this evening. And I remember going to the sergeant cook, who was a cockney, rather a crude kind of character. Caviar? Caviar? What's that? If it's that there stuff in them there red tins, you can tell the CO he had it 3 weeks ago in his stew. We had a new master cook very soon after that. We make a big jump now to Pantelleria.
But did did you have any other experiences in Tunisia?
Only the memory of column after column after column of Germans surrendering. I must say they formed up to surrender in columns. Almost with discipline, I would say. Just as Italians had been surrendering earlier on, it was now the Germans surrendering in bulk, thousands upon thousands. I remember we drove around near one place near where the Bay of Tunis lived, and we saw this wagon. A German refreshment wagon. We went up and we felt the coffee thing was still hot. So we poured ourselves some coffee, which I take it would have been ersatz coffee, not all that pleasant. Chocolate was black, bread was black. And as we were drinking our coffee, ping! A bullet hit the thing. Apparently the Germans were still using it. We didn't know. They hadn't quite surrendered up to that point. So we made ourselves scarce fairly quickly. That was... There was Hammam Met and Hammam Leaf. And it was Hammam Leaf that the Bey of Tunis had his palace. And I think it was the German commander had asked him, could he see the Black Rose dance? Now, the Black Rose, I must explain, was a member of the Senussi tribe coming down towards the southern Sahara, a lot of them are. The men are great warriors, the Senussis, and the women are great entertainers, either dancers or ladies of the night or singers or whatever, entertaining one way or the other. The Black Rose was a dancer, and apparently the German commander, he said no, she wasn't available for dancing. So he refused the German command of the bay. But he actually invited Montgomery to see the Black Rose dance. And Montgomery was so intrigued that he said, would it be possible for some of my soldiers to take back the memory of them and tell the English what a wonderful dancer you have? And the Bey gave an invitation for a dozen odd English soldiers to witness the Black Rose dance.
Did it include you?
Yes. Otherwise I wouldn't be talking about it. We were almost detailed. We didn't want to go. We said, well, what is it, a belly dance? And the farmer said, no, it's not a belly dance, it's a classic dance. And we said, oh God, we weren't all that interested. But we were detailed to go, and we went into this palace, the Bey's palace, which was not impressive. The tiles were rather something like Dutch blue tiles, but they were around the walls not particularly in good alignment. They were put on haphazard. There was a seat very low around the wall that we were squatting on. And then a little Arab band came in, a sort of a banshee band, making also all sorts of wailing noises. And then came the dancer, the Black Rose. And she was big and fat and ugly. And we said, oh my God, we got an evening of this. And then she danced. And we just could not believe it. It's an optical illusion. She was big, fat, ugly, but she was so light on her feet. Her feet seemed to be 3 or 4 inches above the ground. They didn't seem to touch the ground. It was an illusion. She was so light. Somehow she did this very quickly, I suppose. And we were so... we couldn't have enough of this dancing until she was tired out eventually she retired. And we were so pleased to see the fabulous Black Rose that not many Europeans have ever seen.
In what? Where was she clothed?
Flowing robes. Not like a belly dancer, not showing a midriff or anything like that. Flowing robes. And of course, that added to the gracefulness, because when she was spinning around, the robes would fly, would sort of wing out. It was the most fantastic sight, the way she danced.
Was she dressed in black?
No, somber. Not particularly black. Greys and various shades of grey, I would think. But she was so fantastic, the way her feet, her toes, never seemed to touch the ground. We'd never seen anything like it in our life before.
Did you have to give her presents?
No, she just retired and that was it. And we went home. We were called for. The transport was waiting outside the truck, and back we went. But it was just so fantastic that we had seen this.
Was the bear himself present?
He wasn't present, no. We just sat there, and she came in. No word was spoken, just the music played. She danced. She had warm applause. She deserved it. And she smiled and bowed herself out at the end of it all, and that was it. But we all said, what a fantastic experience that not many people have ever, outside Arabs, have ever seen this. Montgomery had seen it. He'd heard about her.
Were the troops polite, or were
oh, yes. No. They were just quiet, and they were just sort of, But she soon started dancing, and that soon had everybody enthralled.
Were there many people watching her?
Only about a dozen of us. Just us.
Just a dozen?
Yeah.
All guardsmen?
Yeah. Yeah.
All from the Coldstream Guards?
No. No, I think we had a couple of Scots, a couple of Grenadiers, Coldstream, mixed. Picked up. Volunteers. You and you.
Why didn't they have more?
That was all that was invited. The Bey said a dozen dozzino or whatever it was, and that was it. To go to the palace. He was not around. He was probably at his harem down at Hammamet. He had a castle there with his harem.
Could you ask for encores?
I think with applauding she gave encores until she'd obviously had enough. She couldn't do any more. But it's one of those wonderful things. It's a lifetime one-off.
Why was she the Black Rose? Was she black-skinned?
No, she was known as the Black Rose. That was her nickname, the Black Rose. She dressed in blackish clothes, not jet black at all, but, and she wasn't black, she was swarthy, but her title was Black Rose.
Was she an elderly woman?
Well, to us she was, she must have been all of 40. When we were half that age, we thought she was bloody old. It was a wonderful experience. Now we can make a jump, and we
you said Pantelleria, I think.
We heard bombing, and we thought, what on earth is that? We hadn't heard explosions like that. And they said, the two islands, one called Pantelleria and one called Lampedusa. And we, with the third, went over to Pantelleria, and our second battalion, who was with the First Army coming from the other side, went to Lampedusa. And I remember arriving at Pantelleria Harbour, which was in ruins, and there was a smell of death. These were always probably dead rats, but I think it must have been dead bodies. You know, dreadful stench. But we weren't much at the dock bit anyway. We went up, it was a volcanic island. We went further up. On one plateau was an American airfield. I remember one evening we saw the flotilla going past. This was going towards Sicily for the invasion of Sicily, which we did not partake in. We went back to Tripoli, did some exercises, and I remember they said, this is the kind of beach you will have with the same shelving of the sand into the sea. So when we got off the landing craft on these exercises, we were up above our knees in water, or up to our waist really. And then there were five of us, two Coldstream. That was Sergeant Wayhop. He was the intelligence sergeant, and myself, I was by this time intelligence section. The officer was Mr. Stryker Smith, that was three of us, one Scots Guardsman and one Grenadier Guardsman. And we were told that we would be the advance party to the landing on Italy. And we would all have medals or a mention in dispatches. Well, it didn't happen that way, because we were on a LCT, a tank landing craft, and the young officer, lieutenant, was a Canadian who was drinking Geneva, which is Dutch gin. In other words, he was having Dutch courage. We were at least 3 hours before the invasion, and I don't know how much gin he'd had, but when we got to where we were to land, we were to land, and then he would drop us, and then immediately pulled back to sea again. Well, we landed, and we were the first guardsmen to get back on the mainland of Europe after the retreat of Dunkirk. No other, except prisoners of war, no other guardsmen had landed on the mainland of Europe, which was something. Now, the reason why we didn't get our medals and mention in dispatches was we landed on the wrong beach. This Canadian lieutenant, who got a bit mixed up with his navigation after drinking Dutch gin, and too late, as he was going back into the shadows of the night, we realised we were in the wrong place. And everything seemed to be like a Shakespearean comedy. There were reeds in front of us between the land and the sea, and our officer went through the reeds to do a little recce as an officer and came back and said, oh my gosh, just the other side of here, there are all the German half tracks, they're all snoozing, so be very quiet and go up the coast a bit. So we were more or less surrounded by these half track vehicles. just the other side of these tall reeds. We came to a white house as it was beginning to get light. This was quite some time after we had landed. And the most fantastic thing happened. The invasion was beginning to take part now. Lots of explosions, lots of stuff flying around, lots of noise. And in front of this White House, we knew the Germans were one side and we were the other. This lovely little Italian in a black suit came up with a tray with six glasses of Lacrima Christi wine. Welcome to Italy! I mean, apparently he was geared up for the tourist trade. He had been a waiter in New York, and he could speak some English, but he didn't know the slang. And he explained it was Lacrima Christi, the good wine from the slopes of Mont Vesuvio, and it was Lacrima Christi, Tears of Christ, the delicious local wine. And I remember Mr. Stryker Smith raising his glass and saying, here's mud in your eye. Whereupon, he wasn't geared up to English slang at all. He thought it was something not very flattering. I thought he was going to throw his glass over Stryker Smith's face, but he composed himself quickly enough to say, and here is sheet all over you. I always remember. That was the memory we have of our invasion of Italy. The first to arrive, but it didn't go according to plan. We eventually got back to the battalion, and of course we should have laid the white tapes to guide them up, and we hadn't. So we wanted to now, if I can make a... 2 or 3 days later, we were starting patrols. We were supposed to take Battipaglia within, 12 hours? 24 hours. Battipaglia should have been ours. I'm sorry, it wasn't. Battipaglia was holding up very badly. And there was an attack on our line. We were along a canal bank. There's a canal and a bank in front of it, which was a good defensive publicity, defensive feature. German half-tracks came up, pummeling our lines. Our six-pounders and other things saw them off very effectively and killed a lot. And a lot of those vehicles were knocked out just in front of our lines, up to a dozen of them. That was a little victory for us. And I remember the intelligence section had to do a patrol that night. And we went out through the gate. And the man to wish us good luck was Company Sergeant Major Misty Wright, who later, within a very short time after, became the VC, Misty Wright. And he wished us good luck. We went up. It was what I hated was doing patrols by moonlight, and this was a full moon. I think a daytime patrol is better. A full moon is deadly. They can see you coming from a hell of a ways off, and they can be hiding in wait for you. It's pretty damn scary. A recce patrol in a full moon is bad. We went past the Germans that had been killed were sitting, leaning, lying in the most grotesque positions around these vehicles. Then going up, we found that we had a machine gun facing at us, with a German behind it.